In case you're wondering what's going on here, because of Ferrari-related disappointments, to appease the great Ferrari gods in the sky, Enzo, the Daytona, a bowl of spaghetti with a lit garnished cigarette as decoration, we will sacrifice a goat to the great racing gods in the sky to keep Ferrari relevant until future reference. Hell's heart, I stab at thee. And on that note, let's start episode 110 of Motorsport 101. The things you've got to do to beat Lewis Hamilton round here, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures and all that. Welcome to episode 110 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighbour, as Mr. Andre Harrison. Good to be back as always. I took a week out. It's almost like I was plotting to come back for like Lewis Hamilton's coronation or something. God damn it! My timing is impeccable as always. With me, as always, we've got the old gang back together. And first of all, in the blue corner, contemplating the loss of his mans, Mr. Ryan Eric King, in the blue corner, Tennessee's second finest, Joseph, well, behind Joseph, I guess, Mr. Roger O'Connell. Hello, sir.
I find it very surprising that a New York Yankees supporter would just be so quick to release a guy who helped get your team to yet another overwhelming success among a litany of overwhelming successes that most of the league around them do not have. I find this very shocking and surprising. Go Jeets.
That, listen, I've done about 100 of these episodes. That might be the biggest put down we've ever seen on this show. Good lord.
No, there's no greater put down than my own self-realization of realizing that my favorite baseball team is trash and my favorite football team is mediocre.
Like, I'm gonna play you the video from Urinating Tree on YouTube about Buffalo Bills being a walking landscape of mediocrity after we're done, RJ. Don't worry. We can all bask in our own mediocrity together.
I remember, yo, that name is bringing me back, because, like, I remember when he was still, like, trying to copy the Angry Video Game Nerd as a game reviewer on YouTube. Jesus, I am old as hell.
Places where you can find us, just to get some general housekeeping out of the way, you can find us on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter @motorsport_101. If you want to follow us personally on Twitter, you can @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, and @RyanEricKing. That's with two Ks. And if you really, really like us and you come to back us financially, you can do so on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 access gets you early access to both this show and to Bike Live, which also returns later this week. And we will talk about a spicy round of MotoGP races at Sepang this past weekend. Andrea Dovizioso taking his sixth win of the season in Sepang, but not without some controversy, because, hey, we got some team orders, yo. Team orders. Mapping 8 is the new Multi 21. Fun times. More on that on Bike Live later this week with me and cohort Lewis Sutterby, so look forward to that. And also, big shout out to our new $5 backer, Nathan Green, as well. Thanks, man. Thanks for backing us. Long time fan on the Facebook page. I've seen your name on there many times. Thanks a lot for backing us, Nathan. Much appreciated, sir. Pardon me. Right. So, fellas, shall we get into the main event of the Most 101 podcast?
Oh, that we've kind of been trying to avoid.
It's kind of inevitable, really, here, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
we could put
into the Grande Premio de Mexico.
May the good Lord help us all. We can put this off no longer. After this short musical interlude, the Mexican Grand Prix. King, Did you know that Max Verstappen is free for free every time Daniil Kvyat gets fired? Nobody mentions that around here, do they?
I guess Verstappen's really pushing for Kvyat to go to Williams then.
It's not pretty.
Did you know that Nico Hülkenberg has never scored in a race where Danny Kvyat gets promoted? Demoted,
yes.
I should say. Don't let the fact that Max Verstappen has won every race after Daniel Kvyat gets demoted from a Formula One team distract you from the fact that Nico Hülkenberg has never scored in a race in which Danny Kvyat has been demoted.
Sad times, yo. Sad times. More on that later. But, like, we'll get the semantics out of the way with Max. I mean, let's not... We know why we're here. We'll talk about Lewis in a minute. But let's not lose sight of Max Verstappen being absolutely sensational pretty much all weekend. Was super fast in qualifying, was kind of unlucky not to be on pole position. He basically rustled all of Mercedes' Jimmies in Q2 by going half a second faster than anybody else. And everyone was like, oh, Verstappen hype! Might get his first career pole position. Not quite, Sebastian Vettel got it, but... yeah, Verstappen passed him at turn one and never looked back. King, like, Max has just been on fire lately, hasn't he?
Yeah, it is undoubtedly... He's in form. He is without a doubt in form. He's making everyone else look silly, albeit, like, it really makes you question, like, is the Mercedes really as bad as, like, is it as bad as people say it is? I'm pretty, like, it really makes the Mercedes look like the cream of the crop, besides people saying that the Ferrari is the best car.
Yeah, because let's be real here, Verstappen just won a Grand Prix beating Valtteri Bottas by 20 seconds over a 70-lap race.
And where was Kimi?
And Kimi was, like, another 25 seconds behind him. It was, like... It was the day of the backup drivers, and if all the backup drivers, Max Verstappen was the least backup-y. More again, well, King, I will discuss your mans in a minute, but RJ, yeah, I know you want to talk about your beloved bandit, but this was a good, was
as,
it not?
As a Days Era Max Verstappen fan, I'm gonna claim myself as a Day Zero. Fan of the driver of the moment, for the likes, for the culture, I guess. I don't know. This was a very good race for Max Verstappen, proving once and for all that, hey, Max Verstappen does not have to blatantly bend and cut and skirt the rules to be a really brilliant driver. Who would have ever thought?
And the Sebastian Vettel camp of the podcast just smirks and just, like, squints its eyes in anger. It's like, whatever you say, RJ. Whatever you say.
Though there is another side to the Verstappen, like the Verstappen story, from Cyril Abitbol, the managing director for Renault, where he admitted, like, there's a reason why Verstappen was so fast, and all the other Renaults had failures. That pretty much they pretty much gave it 110%. That they kind of not prepared for the reliability issues they might face in the high altitude situation at Mexico City, meaning that, like, it was pretty much win it or bin it for anyone with a Renault engine.
Right. Right. So you're basically saying that Renault didn't do any preparation? I mean, same.
No, like, they didn't focus on reliability enough. They wanted to get, like, as much out of the engine as they possibly could.
Yeah.
And kind of forgot by, like, yeah, we're kind of, like, really, really high above sea level, guys. The air is super thin.
Right. So, as you saw, the likes of Daniel Ricciardo, Nico Hülkenberg, Brendan Hartley, finally Carlos Sainz Jr., all fall by the wayside. There was, like, a genuine worry that, oh, goodness, is this going to happen to Mats while he's leading?
That would have been a thing, wouldn't it? But yeah, four out of the six Renault engine cars in the field failed. Nico Hülkenberg was running in fourth place, or set to match his career best finish until his engine conked out. Carlos Sainz is mentioned right at the end. Brendan Hartley was running in 11th place when his engine failed. He was having a really good day out there for Toro Rosso, and he parked it by the wayside as well. And Daniel Ricciardo right at the start. After, again, he started from pretty much the back of the field. He started in 17th after all the engine penalties were calculated.
Oh, yeah, and we didn't even mention Pierre Gasly couldn't even run in qualifying. Yeah. He'd only done a handful of laps before the race, so his first real experience at the Mexico Grand Prix was in the race itself with fuel.
Yeah, before the race itself, Pierre Gasly had ran 12 laps of Mexico City ever in the practice sessions that had come before it. But Gasly ran a solid race in there. But yeah, as mentioned, not the best weekend for Toro Rosso or Renault or half of the Red Bull garage. It's funny.
If you're Zach Brown and McLaren, and if you're everybody that has, you know, put so much investment in the fact that, yeah, getting these Renault engines, these customer Renault engines, is going to be the ticket that brings McLaren back to greatness.
Well, it's like, well, have I got news for you.
Yeah, because Doug, didn't both McLarens make the flag for Honda this time round?
And
Alonso was in the points as well. I think Alonso was ninth or tenth, something like that. So yeah, like both Hondas made the flag. 66% of the Renaults did not make the flag. Interesting. So, how's that Renault contract going for you, Zach? Still confident about it?
He's absolutely confident about it, of course, because, hey, that's opened up the door for other opportunities that we'll talk about later in this podcast. And yes, Fernando Alonso did get in the points. He was a cold, solid 10th.
1 point. He picked himself back ahead of Stoffel Van Dorn in the most irrelevant driver matchup chase. Way to go, Nando. I can dodge this no longer. King, what's up with your mans? Val finished 20 seconds behind the Red Bull today. I'm not impressed.
No one's impressed. I don't know who would be impressed.
No one. This was not good. It's been one of the under-talked about topics of this race was that Mercedes just got completely blown out. That does not happen very often in this era, where Mercs were completely outclassed by Max Verstappen, who's been in the third best car of this season, and has basically...
This was at a power track. This was at a power track where they should have just whooped some wholesale ass, and they qualified in the second row. Admittedly, Bottas wasn't that far behind in qualifying, and you know,
half for a tenth. Reason,
yep, half a tenth of a second. And, you know, that's still good enough for second place points. Keep in mind, Valtteri Bottas was pulling a lot more of his weight for his team and getting them a good championship than, let's say, certain other Finnish drivers.
Kimmy
slumping.
So, King, I think you've got an announcement to make.
Yes. I'm now taking off my shirt because I'm no longer a Valtteri Bottas fan.
King, please keep your pants on for this segment.
I know it hasn't been a secret to you longtime viewers, well, listeners. I'm a fan of a certain Spaniard in the field who's not named Fernando Alonso. So all you Alonso fans, just know. One Carlos Sainz Jr., who I voted Driver of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's my new boy. He's officially my new boy.
We have a new boy, ladies and gentlemen, on the podcast. A new Spanish son. Welcome aboard, Carlos Sainz Jr. You know what? King's brought home a nice young man, the sort of young man that your mother would love. You know, cooks really well, will take some of the pressure off mum in the kitchen, has great hair, will give you great advice, plays a mean game of Gran Turismo Sport. Carlos, like, he's going to be that new son that everybody just sort of loves because he's just a nice Spanish boy.
Right. Welcome aboard, Carlos. So look for everybody to turn on him the second he gets into a dominant championship winning.
Yeah. We're all going to turn him. It's going to be Nando Light by in the next 2 years. Just you wait and see. King's now ruined him. Thanks a lot, King. Way to go.
I tried.
He's ruining everything wholesome and good about Formula One, and there's not much wholesome and good left in F1 these days. Oh dear, oh dear. Oh, okay. I've just looked at the next bullet point, and guys, we can dodge this no longer. I will have to, through gritted teeth, begrudgingly say, Lewis Hamilton, 4-time Formula One world champion.
Woo! Yeah!
Shut up, RJ. Shut the fuck up! Get back in the corner. I will not celebrate this.
I'm already in the corner of my bedroom. This is where my recording spot is.
Good, I'm going to start kicking you in a minute, so shush. Know your place. Yeah, see, this is the part where if you're listening, like, if this was like a great big audience room of all the listeners of the podcast, they'd all be looking at my corner now saying, well, Dre, do you have any words on this?
Yeah.
Why is everybody looking at me for? Oh, yeah. As a head of the Sebastian Vettel fan club, I have to release a brief and very powerful statement. Fuck this, yo. Okay.
Was it 100% unexpected?
No. I wouldn't even say it was like 2% unexpected. This was totally expected. Right, like I pulled this up, like Christina, who of Codemasters, who's a good mate of the show, sent me a link to the video right at the start of the year. I think it was episode 78, where I said I thought Sebastian Vettel was going to win this year's championship.
You had hope. We all had hope, admittedly.
Yeah,
halfway
but
halfway through the season, that was looking pretty damn good.
Sebastian Vettel led 13 rounds of the championship. It all went to shit at Singapore, pretty much.
I mean, well before that. Well before. Like, our boys at Maranello. I mean, not our boys. The boys at Maranello. The people who put this car together let the side down.
Yeah, for those guys that want to go back and find this clip, it is from episode 78 called Odd Squads and Ferrari Hope. If you want, you can go back and find out me basically putting my balls on the table and saying that Seb was going to win the title this year. And I now have to eat a slice of humble pie on this one. But I will say, sincerely, congratulations to Lewis Hamilton on winning his 4th title. Congratulations to all you ham capers out there that are probably grinning like a Cheshire cat right now, listening to me eat a slice of humble pie as the Sebastian Vettel fan of the internet coming out and saying this. This hurts inside. This pains. It burns me that now I've got Hamilton alongside us in the 4th title club.
Ooh, who's ready for the fight for 5 next year?
This is unbearable, King. Like, if Hamilton wins a 5th next year, we're going to start having the all-time conversations, and I'm going to puke profusely into a bucket. I can't stand it. I mean, we are talking about the most successful British racing driver of all time, and what can you say? I mean, he's been practically flawless all year long. Yeah, you know, a couple of minor car gremlins here and there, like in Sochi we had earlier this year. But I've been asked by many people, like, Dre, where do you think it all went wrong? You could maybe make a case and say Baku wasn't a good day. You know, maybe leaving a couple of wins on the table to Val earlier in the year by a car length or two probably didn't help. Singapore certainly didn't help via a matter of circumstance and just sheer shitty luck, I think, more than anything else. And then, of course, the spark plug at Japan. I think, for me, on a personal level, I would put this down a lot to Lewis Hamilton's qualifying, which, in an era where these cars are finding it very difficult to overtake and very difficult to run in clean air, or to run in dirty air, so to speak, track position is king. And when Merckx still has the fastest car in ultimate trim by a good couple of temps, it's probably a bigger factor than a lot of people realise. I think But a lot of people on Twitter have gone into point swings and like, what if Vettel's engine didn't do this? What if Hamilton's headrest didn't do that, etc.? I think a lot of people have overlooked the qualifying. I think Lewis has had, what, 10, 11 pole positions this year? Has now become statistically the greatest qualifier of all time. Shut up, Senna fans. the post-mortem is not going to be pretty, but I will say, of a matter of pride, I think Seb has been the most entertaining thing about this Formula One season by a country mile. From overtakes to comeback performances to basically rustling Mercedes jimmies all year long, because for once, I actually agree with Toto Wolff that this was by far and away the hardest title Mercs have had to win out of their four. This is the seventh time this year that Mercs has not won a race. They've only given up eight beforehand, before the season started, ever in this hybrid era. So they've already coughed up seven this year. So they've had it more difficult than previous years, and Seb was a real thorn in the side, but we shall fall on our swords. I set the hashtag, we went down swinging, and we went down swinging with another badass 19th to 4th. So I will take that, and I will raise my glass of Dr. Pepper. I haven't got Snapple on me. Cheers, Seb. You've been a blast this season. More of that, please, and maybe less of the ramming into another car shit. Okay, fags. Go on, roast me. You know you want to, fellas. I'm an open target. Come on, punch down. You know you want to.
I have nothing to punch down about. Vettel drove amazingly. He had the only trouble is that he had to basically drive a perfect season. And when that all kind of happened, that kind of just took the sails out of his championship challenge. And if it didn't happen in two sudden spurts of two DNFs in the span of three races, it was probably going to get chipped away anyway. Yeah, slowly but surely. That's not Vettel's fault. Vettel did his part. You know, the car's better race trim, but as you mentioned, you know, what good is that if it's stuck in dirty air all the time?
And we gotta admit that Formula One nowadays, it's a championship where back in the old days, not finishing a race was kind of a matter of course. Now, not finishing a race or even finishing lower than you expected to might as well cost you the entire season.
Mercs have ran 36 cars this season in their 18 races. They have one DNF for the whole year. That was Valtteri Bottas' engine failure in Spain. That's the only DNF Mercs have had all year. How do you beat that? Especially when you've got one Lewis Hamilton in one car and two Valtteri Bottas, who has proven to be, at worst, a very solid and capable secondary scorer. Something that Ferrari just doesn't have the luxury of right now. And yeah, like, Ferrari's reliability has always been up and down. It's not the bulletproof V10 era where they pretty much were gifted two titles because of reliability. You've had issues up and down the field all year long. Again, Singapore, you know, I think RJ summed it up very well. I mean, I said it on Twitter as well. I think Seb would have had to have been practically flawless to realistically have a chance. And that's hard to ask for anyone, especially when Ferrari probably had to work harder and probably take more risks to try and beat Mercs in the first place. I mean, Mercs, yeah, they've been more vulnerable this year than ever before, but they are still going to absolutely cakewalk the constructors by a good couple of hundred points by the time it's probably all said and done in November. Again, congratulations to Mercedes for wrapping up both titles again. They are a phenomenal outfit, a dynasty, really, of F1 history now. I think only the fourth team ever now to win four straight years in the Constructors. And they've doubled up with the driver's title as well. And, you know, again, we're going to be putting Lewis in the conversation with the very, very best, I think, by the time it's all said and done. And RJ summed it up quite well on Twitter last night, where he was talking about we're taking number 5 and number 44 for granted right now, because they are the two best guys in F1 by a mile. And I don't care what anyone tells me about Fernando Alonso in that McLaren. those two are the pinnacle of this sport, and we are very lucky to have both of them in F1 at the same time in rival cars, and that are pretty close to each other. And there's a lot of value in that. And, you know, sadly, Lewis is a bit of a Marmite character. I mean, I don't know if you saw his comments, King, after the race, where in the post-race press conference, he said, I could take the easy way out and stop and retreat like Nico did with these four titles.
Yeah, that is, like, something I would expect from, well, you know, there are a couple of people. One lives on 1500 Pennsylvania Avenue. Ooh. Those are the type of comments that are really come up as really childish.
I have to talk about this because, you know, I miss Nico Rosberg a lot. Like, I think a lot of people, no disrespect to Val, but because I think Val has been a bit mediocre since the summer break, I think a lot of people are only now just sitting down and realising just how good Nico Rosberg actually was in their 4 years together to basically give Lewis Hamilton a really good fight pretty much all 4 years they were together.
This should have been obvious in 2013.
Yes, it should have.
Unfortunately, we were all just, I think, too infatuated with Lewis Hamilton and a car that was, well, another car that was silver as opposed to McLaren. But I think a lot of people are only just realising just how good Nico Rosberg actually was. But I saw a lot of people try to defend his comments last night, and all I will say in response to that is, Lewis Hamilton doesn't need defending. He's one of the greatest Formula One drivers that has ever walked this earth. He had a 3-1 record against Nico Rosberg. He has nothing to prove to any one of us here, or to any F1 fan. By the time it's all said and done, he might actually have a legitimate shot of being the all-time wins leader in F1. That's a scary thought, but he's probably going to have 4 10-win seasons in a row, which is ridiculous by any measure, on any scale, in any era. He is a magnificent racing driver, but I am disappointed that he is such a poor ambassador for F1 at times, because it's like every time Lewis Hamilton, finds a way to make a situation worse than it needs to be, he takes it with both hands. It's like, there was no need for you to fire a shot at Nico Rosberg because, you know, God forbid the man wanted to start a family, take care of his baby girl, and, you know, start thinking about the next chapter of his life. Disappointing. To say the least. I don't know what sort of person is sitting there having just won his fourth title, and his third in the last 4 years, and he wants to sit there and think, "Ooh, take that, Nico! I won my title back! You weren't there to defend it!" It's the sort of thing I'd expect from 11-year-olds who've stolen the last juice box in the canteen. That's the sort of, you know, maturity level that I find with those comments. And I know a lot of good people out there that have stopped doing many an important, or stopped many a dream, or many a career path because a kid's come along, whether it be by accident or on purpose. And let me say this, there is nothing cowardly about starting a family or being as good a father figure as you can be. So, Lewis, do better. That's all I will say in response to that. And if anyone wants to add anything to that, feel free. But that's how I perceived it.
I mean, it's like you put it. If the worst you could say about Lewis Hamilton, who otherwise, well, apart from this, is, you know, an excellent driver, an excellent sportsman, a presence that is very much needed in a sport that is very homogenous in one sense. If the worst thing that we can say about Lewis Hamilton is that sometimes he is a bad loser and occasionally is just as bad a winner, you know, it's honestly better than what we get out of some sporting heroes nowadays.
But, yeah, like, congrats.
Especially how we started off this show.
Yeah, like, congratulations, you're a bad sport. And it's like, yeah, congrats, you're basically most elite athletes. Like, To those guys out there that want to cape really hard for what Lewis had to say last night, seriously, a bad sport is not a particularly harsh comment, really, in the grand scheme of things. Let's put it to you this way. Every time Max Verstappen does well, they put Jos on the hard camera. Let that be an example. You could be a lot worse off than just being a bad loser. So, trust me, your boy doesn't need defending. Just take your L. Trust me, it's not a hill that's worth dying on, if you ask me. But yeah, congratulations, Lewis. You know, according to Sky Sports, you know, and some of its fans, you know, a conversation for now is one of the greatest British sportsmen ever. You know, wasn't they? You know, King, that was the most annoying thing about that poll that Sky Sports News put up. Like, I don't know what was more annoying, the fact that Anthony Joshua was already in there, or the fact that he had 25% of the vote.
Like, it really seems like British sports media have a very short, like, memory.
Like, King, remember when, on the show where I used to say that, like, we Brits only pretended to care about cycling?
Yeah.
See how Chris Froome was not on that list, and Team Sky pay him, like, $4 million a year? And he's won three of the last four Tour de Frances, and he was not on that list of four, but Anthony Joshua was, because he's one of their biggest marketing names they use to promote their sports network. Told you. I tried to tell you, people. I tried to tell you.
It also seems like British sport like didn't exist before the year 1999.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah, like, sod the old stuff. Nah, get out of here. Like, we're only here for the now. Like, Samo Farah, who is dodgy, to say the least. To say the least on that one. Anthony Joshua, who's pretty much an embryonic in terms of a sports star. And, again, no Sir Chris Froome. Also, while we're here, because I know that Anthony Joshua's probably going to win Sports Personality of the Year when that comes up in December. If Jonathan Rea is not in the top 10 nominations, I'm going to be very disappointed in you, BBC. Give bike racing a goddamn chance. Jonathan Rea is a friggin' legend. Get him on the nomination list, for crying out loud. More about that on Bike Live this week. Ding! But, yeah. Also, no Ronnie O'Sullivan. Disappointing, Sky. Disappointing. The man's been the face of your game for 20-odd years. He's won 5 world titles, and you're telling me he's not in the conversation. Whatever. Okay. At least they got something about having Andy Murray in there, for crying out loud. But, hey. Let's talk a little bit about how we got to this point a little bit, because this race was pretty much settled at turn 2. Stop me if you've heard that word before. This is one of the reasons I don't like Mexico. I think it's the longest, if not second longest, run to turn one on the calendar. It's a massive, massive launch down to turn one. And Vettel got a good start. Verstappen had to go round the outside of turn one to try and pass Seb. Got aggressive. Took the curb at turn two. Little bit of contact between him and Seb again, coming through turn three. There's a bit of oversteer from Seb on the exit of turn three. He clips Lewis Hamilton's car. Vettel's damaged his front wing severely. Hamilton's got a right rear puncture. Both Vettel and Hamilton go to the back. Verstappen dodges that bullet, goes on to win by 20 seconds. Seb was able to handle the dirty air better. Actually climbed up from 19th to 4th in the end. Was arguably the fastest man on track pretty much all afternoon in clear traffic. Clear air, I should say.
Simply lovely. Just lovely.
Just lovely stuff, really, as Verstappen was too busy teasing his engineers at the front with fastest laps, trying to give him a heart attack, bless him. But Hamilton, I think, eventually finished, I want to say, in 8th place, I think it was. Guys, I know people are going to make a mountain out of a molehill here, but I don't think there was much to review from that turn one incident. Is there?
No, I think what you described it as is pretty much what it was, a turn one incident.
Yeah, like, I sat there, like, I could have been really salty and thrown swag. I genuinely could have been, like, really mad at Max for that one, but I wasn't. Like, I was just like, oh, shit, that's just unlucky. Yeah, well.
Well, that's not what I've heard.
I've seen screenshots of like a split second where Sebastian Vettel is in the middle of a counter steer, and you clearly see he's just trying to take out that right rear tire.
Let's just say I was very disappointed of prominent members of other rival radio networks posting said screenshots on their social media and claiming that Vettel did it on purpose. And the quote I used to describe said person was, "Reaching so hard, you might as well rename yourself Stretch Armstrong." Like, that was me on social media last night. Because, you know, after, like, what happened at COTA a week prior, where people thought that Carlos Sainz may or may not have breached track limits to justify Verstappen's cut by using a screenshot of him and Esteban Ocon, who he did not even pass in that race. A week later, we're at this again, talking about...
Do we have to go to even the day before during qualifying, where it appeared that Vettel's DRS was open outside of a DRS zone?
But King...
Which was then retracted, like, within an hour?
And who Dutch personalities have said the DRS sign there was CGI placed there by FOM. Like, kid you not?
This is what we've got to deal with as F1 fans, man.
I want to work at Ziggo.
Yeah, that is like some... That is some InfoWars type shit.
Get me started.
Look at the before and after pictures, King. You can see a world of difference. Oh god! Like guys, please, like this is a public service announcement to any F1 fan who thinks he's staying woke here. Take it from me. Screenshots taken out of context do not prove your shitty point. Do better. Use video clips. I don't care if you're breaching copyright. Like, add some nuance to your discussion, otherwise you're being a troll. It's like, because I saw people that were like, oh, I'm going to make the shitty point that Vettel did that on purpose, right? And then when they've been found out by people that are actually rational and the voices of reason, they post popcorn gifs of Michael Jackson and pretend like they were actually trolling the entire time. Fuck off. Yeah, I hate shit like that.
You can't post a bowl of popcorn. You gotta get a big bowl of chili. Because it just makes you forget. It makes you forget about the lizard people with the silver demons.
Somebody get RJ's mans, please. Whose mans is this? King, you were saying?
Not my mans, absolutely.
But yeah, oh my god, I forgot what I was going to say. But yeah, like... That's the standard deflect nowadays. I was trolling, I was joking around, like, I wasn't being serious, guys.
Yeah, of course you weren't. And I just got a blowjob off the Pope. Yeah, of course. Yeah, stop doing that, people. Stop. Like, you know what, it's just the blame culture thing in Formula One now, where it's like, somebody has to be at fault for everything. Like, there's no such thing as six of one and half a dozen of the other anymore. Whenever there's some sort of incident in this race, or in any F1 race now, somebody has to be at fault. When, like, there's no nuance to say, well, hey, maybe it was a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Maybe it was a situation where circumstance came into play. One thing led to another. We can't have that. We have to blame somebody. And I think that's the biggest problem with all this, is that, you know, someone's got to be at fault. Like, with Verstappen's cut last week, people were saying that Raikkonen was the one that boxed him out, which just doesn't hold up under any circumstance or measure, because, you know, if it's not Max's fault, it has to be Kimi's fault, doesn't it? You know? But that's what we're dealing with now. Like, Formula One has become a game of blame culture, and, like, somebody's got to be responsible for something, and if not, then we're all going to know about it on the internet, especially if, you know, certain racing driver dads come out and say, you know, Ferrari International Assistance is back like the years 2003 again or something. Fun times. That, again, I completely agree. Racing incident, you know. Verstappen was aggressive, got away with it. And let's be real here, the give a car whip space rule is never enforced in Formula One these days, which is why Grosjean got a 5-second time penalty when Alonso pushed him off the road when he passed him in the race itself. Like, see, King, does that rule ever get enforced these days?
No.
No. It's a rule that exists. I don't think I haven't forgotten Monza 2012 when Seb got 5 seconds
and
for it.
The fact that the cars are so agile that you could pretty much make a case that, yeah, I did give a car with some space, but then, you know, we went further down the road, he didn't get by me, so I decided, oh, he's not taking the space, so I'm just going to close the door.
Yeah. And we were all mad about track limits last week because... Anyone? Anyone at all?
Arc Fave was the victim of it.
Of course. Gotcha. Just thought I'd point that one out for one of those guys that were mad about track limits for 5 days. You know, as you do.
It's almost like my otherwise objective opinions on the sport are subject to change via my own subjective interests.
Could
have ever imagined.
Never. Not in a million years. So, we got a couple of shout-outs to give before we move on as well. Shout-out to Force India, who has sealed their equal best constructors finished in fourth place. And the fun fact that Force India pointed out on their Twitter account after the race, you could have run either one of their cars on their own and they would still be in fourth place in the Constructors' Championship.
Oh my god. Like, to me, I genuinely thought, at the start of the year, I genuinely thought, yeah, Williams have fourth locked down. There's no way that you know, Force India is going to beat them.
Shoot, I was thinking Toro Rosso would get it. I was thinking Renault might finally break through, but y'all... Force India did the damn thing. And I wouldn't be surprised... I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't next year, honestly.
Yeah,
as long as like they're able to still be in operation next year, they're going to be 100%.
I've said it again. Every time you doubt the long-term existence of Force India and their prospects of succeeding, they just find a way to get better.
Hey. But they're reaching a point where it's not going to be on-track issues that take them out of the sport.
Yeah. It's like the famous slash not so, more like infamous owner could be being called into question soon. And of course, yeah. The prize money situation may come into play soon for them as well. Yeah. And let's be honest, a lot of these teams are going to close up soon. I mean, Renault's getting better by the race. McLaren, I think, will definitely be a lot better next year. Like, the points are going to be harder to come by for Force India going forward, but they've got a great team right now.
I really don't want Force India to end up like, you know, like a Caterham or like QPR, or like where like the owners like basically just fucked up.
Yeah, you don't want
I mean, it's the same owner, so you know, you don't have to point the finger too far.
No, you don't. But Force India doing a tremendous. I mean, they have 175 points in the Constructors' Championship right now. The next nearest team, Williams, in fifth on 76, 99 behind. So with only 86 on the table, Force India's fourth place is cemented for another year. I mean, the top five are probably secure. The fight for sixth is going down to the wire between Toro Rosso, Renault, and Haas. That could be interesting. Only 6 points separate them at the moment. With like, also, if you look on Wikipedia, Toro Rosso's column is enormous because they've had five different drivers this season. It's kind of funny. Well, you know, the number 10, the number 26, the 28, the 39, and the 55. Well, although, to be fair, I think the 39 is just Brendan Hartley's temporary number, not his permanent one, which he's now chosen as 28, because Brendan Hartley is going to be sticking around for a while.
Really neat.
Yes! We'll get to that in the news section very shortly. But, it's worth saying now as well, Esteban Ocon was running in third for a good chunk of that race before the early stop brought Raikkonen into the podium positions. But Esteban Ocon matching his career-high finish from Catalunya, where he finished in fifth place again. Great drive from him. And shout-out to Lance Stroll, his best performance as well since Azerbaijan, in sixth place. Could have easily been top five as well towards the end, but the dirty air was a little bit too strong.
He's top 10 in the points. He's now past Felipe Massa's total. Yeah. I said at the start of the season that, hey, Lance Stroll could actually outscore Felipe Massa in his rookie season. That's not looking so bad right now.
Just don't tell the Massa Mafia that. They'll be coming for your head. And that fan base is extensive and rabid.
I wonder what they're gonna do when Massa's not gonna be around next year.
King, don't you insinuate such things.
Well, I'm not insinuating. I'm just re-reporting facts that have been reported by legitimate motorsports news outlets.
Some of which advertise on NBC Sports Network now.
Oh.
Every single commercial break.
How about that? Yeah, I mean, Williams still, their lineup for next year is still up for grabs. I love that Felipe Massa just doesn't really give a shit anymore and is basically was criticizing both his main rivals for his seat next year, saying that, like, Paul de Resta's, like, DTM results weren't very good, and I don't know what Robert's going to be able to do with one arm. Like, Felipe Massa just doesn't give a shit anymore, and I find no shits Massa a lot more fun, even if he is slightly washed as a driver.
Slightly?
I was being nice. I'm in a good mood, King. Good mood. Nice things. Say nice things. Good stuff.
Also, I know it's not on our set list, but Kevin Magnussen got sick over the weekend. And once it all flushed out of his system, he suddenly found some extra speed. He finished 8th in a Haas that was looking dead to rights all weekend.
He really did. Haas looked terrible in practice, but K-Mag rode that thing to an 8th place. Probably his best drive I've seen him in all season. Well done, K-Mag. Good shout out to him. That was a good spot that I missed on that one, RJ. It was hard to attention because, let's be real, only 4 dudes finished on the racing lap by the time we were all said and done. And one of them was Sebastian Vettel, who was a minute and 10 off the top. Not fun. But, on a personal level to McLaren, for the sake of everybody and because people will not shut up about this, please have Fernando Alonso be in a good car next year, because he was feisty. Fun times, yo. Fun times. He limped his way to a point, he ran Grosjean off the road, and Grosjean got the penalty, and he refused to give in that 9th place to Lewis Hamilton that easily. Good stuff.
Don't forget, he also set the 5th fastest lap in Q1, knowing that he had an engine penalty.
Because Fernando Alonso doesn't give a damn about your damn Sauber. Simple as that. Like, Twitter was all mad because Ericsson probably would have made Q2 if it weren't for that. Because Fernando just likes
made
to troll
Q2
people.
Made Q2 to miss Q3 by, 3 seconds?
Of course. Just like the form book suggested, RJ. What do you mean?
He's still going to get bumped up the grid anyway. Anyways, I give this Mexico Grand Prix 5 lucha arm drags out of 10.
I think it'd be nice. I was thinking 4.
No, I was thinking 5 too.
You guys clearly must love your DRS-assisted turn 1 overtakes. Good for you.
Oh my god.
4.
Hey, Verstappen had a good drive. It was nice to see Vettel and Hamilton, despite, their problems at the start of the race, have to race through the field.
And we didn't even cover the best part. DJ Hardwell in the house!
Oh my god.
Rotating podium places. Kimmy spinning in place and taking a sip out of his damn champagne bottle.
It's like, come on, Kimmy, make some noise! And you can tell Kimmy just holding the champagne bottle, just going, fuck off. And he takes a swig in front of Hardwell. Good times, yo. Good times. See, like, F1's gone completely on the other end of the scale. We've gone from nothing to Michael Buffer and DJ Hardwell in the space of a fortnight. I can get used to this.
What are we going to have in Brazil and Abu Dhabi?
We're gonna have Nelson Piquet Sr. do the podium interviews again. Fun times. Apparently, we'll lift his restraining order just for the weekend and see what happens.
No, they're actually going to play the Tema de Victoria when the winner crossed the line in Brazil. That's what they're going to do. They're going to embrace the meme.
Be like, Max Verstappen, do Netherlands.
Oh no, I don't think after recent comments they're going to be triumphant about Max's return to the city of Interlagos.
Oh no.
True. I completely forgot that happened.
They want none of that.
So look for Max Verstappen to do to the Brazilian flag a la Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series 1997 with the Canadian Maple Leaf sometime in 2 weeks. I think it's in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
Time is just a construct. It's just a made up thing.
Doesn't exist, yo. Doesn't exist. Yeah, right.
Just like Steve McQueen said in that one movie, racing is life. Everything else is waiting.
Mm-hmm. Fun times. Right, Mexico out of the way. Congrats again, Lewis. I've just seen that Mark Marquez has congratulated him on Instagram, and now I'm very disappointed. Mark, I expected better from you.
Hey. He's just securing. He wants to, you know, in case they need to get rid of Botas early. You don't know. Mark Marquez make the switch.
To what, KTM?
Not Mercedes, homie.
KTM doesn't make Formula One cars.
Yet.
No. Even as someone who loves KTM, no.
I mean, the Expo is it's a genuine F1 car, right?
Of course.
Yeah, just a little balance of performance issues.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. We'll get it up there. Give it some time. So while King draws up the plan to turn an Expo into a Formula One car, we'll play some music and we'll come back and enter the news. Let's break down some more Red Bull politics, because they're always fun, right, King? Right?
God help us all.
Yeah, so it turns out that we mentioned Brendan Hartley again there in the Mexico segment, but you bet, I know what you're thinking. Dre, I thought Hartley was only a one-off at COTA. Yeah, so did we. Turns out, a week in the Tuesday after the American Grand Prix, Helmut Marko said, yeah, we're dropping Kvyat out of the program altogether. He's gone, yo.
He's free.
He's gone. Brendan Hartley is now going to fill in for the rest of the season. So, Hartley and Gasly, the fourth different lineup Toro Rosso has had this season, will now be the last for Toro Rosso this year. Because, hey, they've already used their full driver limit for the year anyway. But yeah, so Hartley is in full time. Now I know what you're thinking. Wasn't Brendan Hartley going to go to IndyCar this year? Well, again, so did we.
And so did Chip Ganassi.
We weren't the only ones. So did Chip Ganassi. Like that, there was already negotiations deep
no,
in
no,
place.
He was signed.
Hold up. Yeah. All that was missing was Brendan Hartley's signature on the fully drawn up contract for him to race with Chip Ganassi in 2018.
No. He was signed. According to Franz Sosa Toro Rosso, they had to negotiate with Chip Ganassi to get him released from his IndyCar contract.
Back payment under the table. Under the table payment for Chip. Like, yeah, Chip, we're just going to take your man's. And, yeah, thanks a lot for that, man. Yeah,
here's some cash, Chip. Hire whoever you feel like.
You feel like. Who's on the board? Maybe a reigning rookie of the year who might have been more impressive than the other highly publicized rookie at the Indianapolis 500 who genuinely could have won it.
You mean part-time British person Ed Jones?
Part-time British person.
Lucky Brit. He is no longer a struggling Emirati. He is now a plucky Brit.
Yes.
Yo, but in all seriousness, that is a ballsy damn move.
I like it. I like it a lot.
It is ballsy from a lot of camps. Ballsy for Toro Rosso to be like, hey, Hartley, we want you in our Formula One car. We know we dropped you from the Red Bull program, you know, a couple of years back, but we want you.
See, and, see, Daniil, there is still hope that you can find your way back home.
Somehow I'm not so sure about that one, but hey, you know, hope is a cruel and fickle mistress. Ask anyone to put money on Ferrari to win the world title. Oh, shit. Anyway, Ed Jones going to Chip Ganassi Racing for 2018, and I was like, everyone on Twitter, like, this did not, a lot of these deals sort of leak out a little bit on the news sites before they actually come to fruition. This one was a complete shock. No one saw this coming on the interwebs, outside of, you know, rumour mill columns that IndyCar fused to fill up the off-season. NBC, I'm looking at you. All of you in your silly season columns. Ed Jones is a thing in Chip Ganassi in their two-car team for next year. I mean, you get the honour of backing up Scott Dixon. That must be great, right? Because Scott Dixon is great, so, you know, Chip is great. But seriously, Ed Jones, what do you guys make of that one? That's a whopper.
Hey, Chip Ganassi likes winners, and he thinks Ed Jones could be a winner.
Yeah, I believe it. I don't know who the quote came from. I want to say it was Mike Hull of Chip Ganassi that said, "We like to have guys that don't need to be taught how to win races." And if you look at Ed Jones' record in Indy Lights, you see a guy that was winning races, tied Greg Moore and Paul Tracy's rookie records for the most wins to open an Indy Lights career. Again, almost won the Indianapolis 500 on his first year out with Dale Coyne.
Yeah. By any account, Ed Jones was fantastic last season. Across the board, was strong almost everywhere, apart from maybe the short ovals where, you know, Dale Coyne just isn't that great in general. But yeah, Ed Jones, I was like, whoa, that's a kind of left field move. And I actually really liked it. I think that's a great move. I think Ed Jones is a great talent. And, you know, we need some British influence in IndyCar at the top again, right? Am I right?
That's, you know, true. Haven't had that really since Dario Franchitti was at Ganassi. Also, it's pretty awesome to see a guy like, here's a guy who 3 years ago we thought his career was done because he hurt his back twice when he was in Formula E, and we were all kind of thinking, is this going to be it? Then he jumps to America, and whoa, now all of a sudden some things have happened very fast.
Yeah, another piece of the IndyCar silly season grid coming together. I mean, we got the news last week about SPM confirming Hinch for another year and Robert Wickens to join him. So now Chip's team is set with Dixon and Jones. Still waiting on some of the other stuff to come into play, but we've got a pretty rock solid idea about most of the grid now. Still waiting to see what I think some of the newer teams are going to do, whether Carlin wants to run full time this year, what Jinkos are going to do, what's their plans for the whole year.
Kyle Kaiser and Junkos are running the month of May and two yet-to-be-announced races with the potential for more depending on sponsorship. Just after coming back to social media after totally not doing the amazing race latest season, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Connor Daly finds himself out of work.
Of course. Somewhere you can hear Danny Brennan furiously crying into his diecast 118 of Connor Daly's car at the Indy 500, fueled by bacon, of course. Sad face.
Yeah, it's looking very likely that it's going to be Team Brazil at AJ Foyt Enterprises. No, they're not going to get Elio Castroneves, and no, Vitor Mera is not walking through that door. They're going to get
Felipe, baby.
No, it's not even going to be Felipe. Per Marshall Pruitt at Racer Magazine, it's more than likely going to be Mateus Laist, Freedom 100 winner, who's going to get that seat.
Oh, wow. So that's why Matt quit doing MSTF1.
That explains everything.
Apparently this is being funded by Brazil's major sporting television network that shows the IndyCar races?
Yes. Which is like the most insane thing to me.
Wow. It's like MotoGP next year, because like Xavier Simeon is being directly funded by RTL for his seat in Avintia next year alongside Tito Rabat.
But But basically, what the network's fear was that Brazilian interest in the series would, like, completely drop off the face of the earth without Elio, with Kanan going to Foyt. Like, pretty much, why should they care about watching IndyCar anymore?
We can't see Helio's magnificent hair and occasional podium finishes. No! God. Like, I must admit, though, it is a little bit annoying that, like, every time Foyt has a bad year, he blames the drivers rather than the car. Because
If this goes through, it's the third different driver lineup they've had in as many years.
And the third time they've cleared the decks as well. Not just driver, but both seats.
Yeah, that's what he meant by lineup change. Like, the entire thing. Just like, everywhere. Both you guys, you're fired. Like, what?
Somebody give Carlos Munoz a goddamn seat for next year. And I'm not saying that just because he's been on the show. Like, give Carlos Munoz a goddamn seat already. And if you can squeeze one in for Connor Daly, that would be nice too.
Who probably needs to form the other half of an All-American Voltron over at Ed Carpenter Racing? Just saying, Connor.
Just saying. Yeah, he's it's no secret that road and street courses are his strong point.
Just saying, Team America. It's like, it's almost like they really shouldn't have dropped J.I. Hildebrand or something. I don't know. Just a thought. But, Speaking of IndyCar, it looks more or less penciled in that we're going to have another race added to the calendar in August. Did you guys like that Mexican Grand Prix? Good news, you're going to get another one next year, only in IndyCar. Because according to race organizers, they reckon it's a, quote, 99% done deal that we'll have an IndyCar race at the Mexico City track next year. Yay! Yeah.
And the races at Mexico City back in the mid-2000s were a pretty damn big draw, especially when you have a contending Mexican driver on the grid. Now, you don't want to have one right now, but Dale Coyne now has a vacancy of that number 19 car. Does it go to Esteban Gutierrez? Does it go to RC Anderson? Does it go to somebody whose initials are literally TBA?
We'll know on the Friday at St. Petersburg, RJ. You know how this goes.
On the Friday at St. Petersburg, about 15 minutes before practice starts.
Ta-da! It's Vautier again! Yay! Gordon Machado's
like, meh.
You know. All French team! It's A1 Grand Prix again! Yay!
Oh, God, no. Don't come in here with that. Don't come in here with that Twitter hype.
King, it could have been worse. It could have been track.
Okay. That's true.
Point taken. But IndyCar most likely going to Mexico City in August next year. That should be fun. Looking forward to that. Speaking of fun, McLaren, once again, are doing Uncle Zach Brown cool stuff in the off-season.
Not conflict of interest.
Not conflict of interest. And hey, if you want to add star power, you're losing Jeff Gordon, but you're gaining one Fernando Alonso. Oh, and you're also gaining one Lando Norris, because that's two-thirds of one of United Autosport's Ligier prototype lineup for the Rolex 24 at Daytona. This is already a pretty stacked-looking grid. I mean, have you looked at Team Penske's driver lineup, which is going to have Elio Castroneves and Juan Pablo Montoya and their combined five Indianapolis 500s competing full-time for them?
Oh.
And that's before they added Ricky Taylor, and that's before you consider that Simon Pagenaud and your boy, Graham Rahal, in part-time.
Whose man's is Graham Rahal's all of a sudden? That's news to me. I think it was Tony DeZino on Twitter just said, hey, like, it looks like Daytona might have a better driver lineup for it than Le Mans by the time we get to the middle of next year. And he may have a point there, because it is stacked for Daytona next year. Just saying. Imagine that. Like, hey, United's like, oh, yeah, you can have Fernando, but only if you get to give Lando Norris a chance as well. What a drawback!
What a drawback. The young kid who might actually be, who has a chance to be just as quick, if not quicker, under a given context.
Just saying. It's not a bad deal. Not a bad deal.
And if nothing else, it inspired the greatest memes of all time.
Indeed. Because he doesn't love one of those places Lando and Nando would rather be. Also, for those guys that... So moving on real quickly. For those guys that loved our infamous segment talking about some of the greatest sports fights out there in many a times, which is still one of my all-time favourite Motorsport 101 segments. Ladies and gentlemen, we had a fracas in NASCAR this past weekend. We have a fracas. Over to our flight correspondent, RJ O'Connell.
Well, fans, we're going down here inside the paperclip. The famous paperclip of Martinsville Speedway. Chase Elliott was about to win his very first race and then swoops in one Virginia native, Denny Hamlin, who just runs right in the back of him and punts him out of the way with less than 10 laps to go. Hamlin doesn't go on to win the race. That goes to his teammate Kyle Busch. But nobody was talking about that after the fact. They were all talking back that Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin were about to scrap. And here is the most surreal thing. Virginia native Denny Hamlin at a Virginia racetrack is getting booed for dumping Chase Elliott, who was getting the overwhelming applause of the crowd.
Yeah, well, that takes some doing.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Denny admitted after the race that, yeah, he shouldn't have wrecked him.
Really? Oh, good.
It did take a lot of chilling out because he did drop a BS bomb on live television.
That was the least of Denny's worries, though, given what happened after the race. Isn't that right, RJ?
Yes. We had a Big Billy. We had an Alan. Alan what? Is the kind of guy who will buy a brand new Camaro because they have more money than sense. And then have a few beers and drive it right into the river in the middle of downtown Houston. Well, some big boy with a big old beard decided that he wasn't taking too kindly to seeing his boy get knocked out of the race, so he wanted to fight Denny Hamlin himself.
Wait, standing at 6'4", weighing in 325 pounds, here's Big Billy! Oh, it was like this guy seemed genuinely like really upset that Denny had wrecked his boy Chase Elliott.
That's just getting back to like some of the old school kind of NASCAR stuff. Like you say, NASCAR has lost its base,
and yeah, it actually kind of has because the rule changes and constant change in the product kind of alienated everybody. But this is kind of like,
yeah, you get that emotion that you don't see in a lot of other sports, better or for worse.
Yep, it's like, this is peak NASCAR. I was watching the clip and I was like, this is peak NASCAR right here. This is so NASCAR right here. It was hilarious. Denny was about to fight Big Billy. Luckily, the sheriffs came down and ended the fracas before it got out of hand, before it became a full brouhaha. So sadly, it was more of a skirmish than a real fight. But shout out to Denny Hamlin for going viral for a day or two. That was fun.
For a day.
And it's still probably not even the most interesting NASCAR fight of the month, because I've just posted in the chat a clip from a short track in rural Indiana where a race car crash led to a fight, and then drivers being tased with sun guns and
what?
Then arrests. And
whoa!
A figure eight.
Whoa! King, we have to watch this video now. Like we have to show live reactions to this.
Yes,
okay?
this is our live reaction here. So I'm about 25 seconds into this clip, and this person is mad that they just got punted off the road.
Okay. Hang on. Should we just go back to the start and watch it all together then? Yeah. Okay. So yeah. I'm at zero.
Yeah,
okay. I'm at zero.
We'll play 3, 2, 1, play.
All right. We're having our live reaction to this very entertaining figure of eight fight. This happening in Anderson, Indiana.
This week on Destruction Derby Raw.
Oh my god, I miss the Destruction Derby games. Oh, that is a blatant take him out hit.
That's a spin out. He was taken out there. The car's not working. He's trying to get out of the grass.
He's doing burnouts, and oh, you almost got T-boned in the driver's side.
Yep.
Oh, now Big Boy is angry.
Oh, dear.
He's pulled up alongside.
He has his breast cancer awareness helmet. He is doing burnouts for the crowd.
Yeah, he doesn't care anymore. So I'm going to put on a show for these fans, one way or another.
This is great. And it
drives into the
partial. Oh, my God. Oh, he just
ran
used...
over the top of him. Oh, he got out of the car so quick. Man, this guy is husky.
Oh, we have another Big Billy here. We have another. Whoa! He's going to pull him out of the car. I've never seen him move so fast.
He's throwing down punches.
Oh,
he's laying down punches.
Oh! Jesus Christ.
He's throwing about 15 strong ones in there. Oh my goodness. Here comes the medical team. Here comes the cops. Oh!
Oh my God.
Oh, he's been tased.
He got tased.
He got tased.
Oh my God. He's just so chill about it.
It's like, yeah, I just got tased. No big deal.
Bro, man, this ain't nothing. I'm taking a buckshot right in the hind end. This will be fine.
Oh my God. And he's being arrested live on the side of the track.
Appreciate what you do here, partner.
I can't believe on the podcast we watched someone. This is the craziest racing fight I've ever seen.
He's literally being arrested and then being put in the medical car to go down to the station. This is amazing. This is fantastic.
Some bars on it.
Oh my God.
I love this show. I love this show so much. May we never stop being ridiculous. We just watched somebody get tased at a race circuit and arrested. I love this shit. Oh my God. Like, I have to get Nora out of pseudo-retirement to put that clip on YouTube somehow. That is amazing. Oh my God.
Oh, I had never actually seen it. I'd heard about it, but that was my first time watching it through, and I'm just like, yo!
That actually happened!
That actually happened.
Oh my God, that's crazy. That is ridiculous. Oh dear. One more bit of news to get through, and then we'll crack open the mailbag for this week. RJ, tell us about the Rally of Wales.
So admittedly, I've kind of checked out on the World Rally Championship because there is just so much going on at once, and when it's not like the winter when Rally Monte Carlo and Rally Sweden are going on, eventually all this racing starts up at once and you just kind of push it out to the side. You just know it's there but you're not like actively watching it. And then I heard that Welshman Elfin Evans had won the Welsh Rally of Great Britain, which is a pretty big deal because he's the first Welsh native to actually win the home race, which is a pretty big deal. And here's something else that's a pretty big deal. Yeah, Sebastian Ogier won his fifth consecutive title after making a last-minute switch to what is altogether now not actually a factory team. But we had seven different winners. We had seven different winners this year. This hasn't happened since the early 2000s. Only one of them is above 34 years old, and three of them are under 30. It's amazing what can happen to the World Rally Championship if you give young and talented drivers, which is something that the series has had in abundance, opportunities to succeed. All four of the big teams have won races. That's Ford M Sport, that's Hyundai, that's Citroën, and that's Toyota in their first year back.
And Volkswagen also pull out. Thanks, Volkswagen.
No.
Volkswagen is still about one-third of Chattanooga's economy. It's fine.
Sweet.
They no longer build a new shopping mall every time Sebastian Ogier wins a rally, but still doing a lot of work for us.
Good stuff. That was our rally report. Let's crack open the mailbag. And we got a lot of questions this week. You guys came through hard this week. Well, congratulations to you guys. Okay, I'm gonna combine two questions in one because they both kind of say the same thing. Shout out to our man Miles, who's a big Patreon backer for us for a while. And Ryan Glennon, who runs our fan Instagram page. I can't remember the exact username off the top of my head right now. It's something like motorsport101_fanpage. Go follow it. Like, Ryan does good stuff over there. Thanks, Ryan. And Miles says, do you have high hopes for 2018 with Merckx, Red Bull and Ferrari plus McLaren? Could be great if one if Dirty Air doesn't screw F1 over, brackets, again. Similar deal to Ryan, who asks, with Mercedes losing 7 races this year, almost as much as the last 3 years combined, are we going to see the field close up even more in 2018? So, kind of both hinting the same thing, really.
Now, the hope is that it closes up. The reality is that anything can happen, and Mercedes might probably pull away further. And Ferrari will lose ground to Red Bull, because that's what we're trending in.
Oh, God, that's a very real possibility, isn't it? Jingles.
Yeah, that's scary. Yeah, that is a real possibility.
Ferrari and Red Bull beat each other up for silver while Merckx just curb stomp everybody again. Oh, God.
But also, point, will McLaren actually be, like, a race-winning, like, contender next year? Will they actually be able to
this will be This will be the litmus test, because if nothing else, they've had their chassis have reported to be very, very excellent. Just down
reportedly.
On power.
Reportedly.
That's what every McLaren fan has said since 2014. That, oh, our chassis really good, you guys. Well, is it better than Red Bull's? Because if it isn't, I don't know why we're having this conversation, quite frankly.
But don't worry. The jump from McLaren to Renault will have exponentially, like, maybe like a 1% difference.
Sweet. Optimism, you guys. It's in abundance here. Question from Dom at Spitfires 2007, who asks, will we see a brand new world champion next year, i.e. Ricardo or Verstappen, brackets, dare I say Van Dorn?
Oh, I thought that was going to be Bottas, but oh my god.
Or a repeat.
No.
Optimism like I said, out the arse.
Like I said earlier in the show, it's probably going to be a fight for 5 between Vettel and Hamilton.
Really? That's Van Dorn?
That's not a bad thing.
Stop. Yeah, that's not bad.
Don't talk bad about my boy, Stoffel Van Dorn.
I think Van Dorn, like, it mainly depends on the state of McLaren.
Very much so. And Fernando is still Fernando. It's kind of a problem.
It's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
For
the field.
You sassy bitch. Miles also asks, also, follow-up, with how close the front is getting again, could the 2021 regulation changes ruin the competitiveness of F1 again? Should they leave the regulations alone?
Ooh. This is the same argument we got into, like, 2013.
Yeah, it's like, guys, it's actually kind of close. Are we sure about this? I don't know. That's the thing about new rules. You're kind of venturing into the unknown and opening Pandora's box, and whoever's good out of the gate tends to do very well.
Yeah.
And then it's a matter of waiting for everybody else to play catch up, and who knows how long that could take. I mean, yeah, in 2009, it was half a season. In 2014, well, we're still kind of playing catch up. So who knows?
And keep in mind, this is going to be the first set of wholesale regulations changes that was conducted entirely by brand new leadership.
Mm. Yeah.
It's almost going to be unilaterally made by Ross Brawn.
May the good Lord help us all.
And in theory, Ross Brawn knows what's good for racing and knows how to make a good product. So maybe we start to see, you know, geared towards more like cars are harder to drive, have less topside aero in the exchange for ground effect, you know, a simpler engine that still puts out a ridiculous amount of power, more flexibility in the rules. I don't know. You gotta kind of hope they get it right.
Yeah.
He's hoping. Speaking of which, ties in quite nicely with Smadge1 on Twitter, who goes, are Liberty going to take the initiative from the general lack of overtaking of this year in F1 and sort out a moderate rule change solution to push through for 19 or 20, pre-21? Sounds unlikely, but they have generally had a get-shit-done attitude so far.
Yeah, but they're going to get stuff done in the new regulations, but the thing is, we're going to have to wait for those regulations to come into effect. And there are things about Ross Brawn's mentality about F1 that I personally don't like, that he thinks that ground effects is not the solution.
Uh-oh. All of a sudden, I'm not so sure about this, King.
I mean, I've known this the whole time. Like, he's made it pretty clear, like, anytime overtaking is, like, he knows that dirty air is an issue, but he doesn't think that, like, ground effects is the ideal solution.
What do you think is the ideal solution, then?
He doesn't know.
If you slash the topside aero, I mean, yes, you make the cars harder to drive and you make them easier to overtake, but you also, you know, you also lose that that much vaunted spectacle of new lap records being broken, because altogether now the cars are not going to be as fast.
Yeah, but RJ, man, like, who will be the beloved intern that gets to push the new track record button graphic 17 times during qualifying?
The Tom Carnegie button.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think we should take a note from IndyCar, where IndyCar realizes that, yeah, new track records are flashy and all, but, like, again, it doesn't make the quality of the racing any better. Because do we still not forget that that at the start of the centennial era, at the start of the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500, the Speedway announced that they wanted to break the track record by the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, and pretty much they realized how ridiculously unsafe that would be, and they pretty much threw it out the window that we're not going for the track record anymore. The track record is going to be what it is for pretty much the foreseeable future.
As our dear friend Sarah Connors once said, always be yourself, unless you can be IndyCar. Then be IndyCar.
IndyCar.
Pretty much. Brian also asks, with Max getting 2 wins and 80 points in the last 4 races versus 63 in the first 14, what's changed in Max, and is his success good for F1?
His success is good for F1. He just needs to keep on the straight and narrow and, you know, not take up after his father's worst habits.
Care to explain why, RJ?
Matt's made some very rude comments. Again, to the press, described, I don't know who it was that he's described as a Mongol, short for Mongoloid, which is a deeply offensive term to anybody who works with people who are afflicted with Down syndrome. I get being an edgy 20-year-old hothead, because, hey, that was me at my age. Why wasn't in the profile of being an elite Formula One driver? Matt can ruffle feathers on the racetrack. He doesn't have to be like a human shitheel away from the track to ruffle people's feathers and to cause controversy and intrigue on the track.
All he has to do is exist.
Yeah, like people are like, oh, I want F1 drivers to have a personality. This is what I want. Like, there's a way to have a personality while still being a respectful human being.
Yeah,
right. You'll find most of the better heels in pro wrestling nowadays. You know, they're actually really good people away from the wrestling ring.
Yeah,
and even, like, their character personas as villains don't really put people down. They just mainly think that they're the greatest things to exist ever.
Yeah, they're panto villains. That's the, like, they're basically playing pantomime rather than anything else. So, yeah. I mean, for me, nothing's changed in Max. I just think he's had a bit more of a rub of the green reliability-wise compared to the first half of the season, which was basically a write-off.
I don't think Verstappen is any better than we thought he was. I think he's just fallen into that Daniel Ricciardo slot of being there to pick up the pieces when you know, the top runners fall.
You mean Daniel feasts on the weak Ricciardo?
Yes.
Are you saying that Maximilian Verstappen also feasts on the weak?
Yes.
Just a little bit.
I'm not saying that he's, like, you know, a below average driver or anything. He's still probably one of the best guys out there. It's just that the Red Bull isn't really that fast.
But hey, he still blew out Germans by 20 seconds, so, ha!
Whoa, my former mans, get that straight.
Okay.
He is now my mans. I am considering Valtteri hashtag Bottas Bottas a reclamation project.
more hype for next year. How, from Len M4, who asks, how do you think the 2019 season will go if Mercedes have Lewis and Ocon, Red Bull with Max and Ricciardo, and Ferrari with Seb and Sainz?
Well, that just depends on who's going to be at McLaren. Is it Lando's time to get called up? Does somebody try and lure Lando Norris away from McLaren?
Who put Chris Cook in the RJ seat all of a sudden, getting the names mixed up?
Be sure to comment in the comment receptacle section below for your feedback on this section.
Oh dear. Me personally, I think if Red Bull had a half decent car, they would win, because I think Red Bull's got the best driver partnership in F1 with Verstappen and Ricciardo. Sainz is great. Not sure about him at the very highest level just yet. That would be very interesting. I think Ocon's a very safe pair of hands, and I think you could put him in that Mercs right now, and he'd be immediately contending for podiums and wins. Probably would still say Mercs. Safe pick.
We are going to get so spoiled by Esteban Ocon and Max Verstappen rewriting their F3 rivalry on the big stage. That's going to be nuts. Yeah.
Henry Chapman asks, what motorsport series that is now defunct would you want to see back?
Dare I say...
Yes.
IROC?
Yes. Put it down, track. We're bringing back track. I know it never actually raced, but it's coming back. Team Racing Auto Circuit.
Nice. Good pick. I'm a big fan of anti-gravity racing, so yeah, I think we should just bring back Wipeout 3 at this point, personally.
We can't bring it back. It's not going to happen for another 100 years.
Yeah. It's retro. It's retro. It was on the original PlayStation, King. You know.
That's true, but we don't yet have the infrastructure to build a 10-story downward spiral in the middle of a Grade 1 FIA circuit.
Damn it.
Say it with me. Build that spiral. Build that spiral.
We're going to build a spiral? Oh, dear.
100 feet higher. 100 feet higher.
That's how you enforce track limits. You just build all tracks like Wipeout.
Sweet!
There was no runoff area back in those days.
Or as Lucas would say, a fucking concrete wall. Fun times. Danny Brennan asks, who from Sky Sports F1 infiltrated C4 / David Coulthard, and what can we do to avert this crisis happening again? I think I know what he's referring to. Basically, he was referring to David Coulthard basically losing his goddamn mind in the commentary box and immediately throwing Vettel under the bus for what happened on turn one. Yeah, C4 were very Hamilton heavy this past weekend in their highlight packages.
Why not?
Which my response to Danny is, are you new here?
British TV is going to British TV.
Like, if you're surprised at this, I don't know why you're still watching F1. just saying, man. Sid Kumar asks, what is Kvyat's best option apart from the possibility of getting the Williams seat?
Well, it's a strange thing, because if he gets the Williams seat, it means Williams and Martini have to bend their hard and fast rule of 25 and up, because Kvyat turns 24 next year. And so does Pascal Wehrlein.
Like, again, it's not Martini's rule. Like, it's something that they can't bend. Like, it is the rules.
It's a hard and fast rule. So that's a no. And I don't think he's going to end up anywhere else. But hey, that might be the best for Danil at this point. Like, he's... As mentioned, he's 23. He's a podium-level finisher in Formula 1. He beat Daniel Ricciardo head-to-head. The guy is quality. He just needs a team that actually appreciates
him
for once.
He beat Carlos Sainz in the same team in GP3.
Yeah.
He is still very good, but he needed to get out of Red Bull, at least for a little bit. Just for a little bit. You know, that LMP1 project, I know it's... Well, I know, yeah, it's LMP1 in a weird transition period where there's only going to be one manufacturer and a bunch of privateers who may or may not be any good, but it's something.
True, very true. Again, I think Kvyat, this needs to be somewhere he's appreciated. Something with Felipe Massa. Oh, I'm just joking.
Go into esports.
do we want Daniil Kvyat in esports?
Oh god, like we're gonna have like WTF1 corrupt him. I don't think that's good for anybody. Evan but _MK asks, do you agree that F1 is too focused on making the cars fast rather than producing good racing? Yeah, we kind of already touched upon this. Yes. Hard and fast, yes, for reasons mentioned earlier. Our boy, Charles, #NotYourSon, Regin Bull, asks, why did you complain about Mexico being a piss-poor track to race on when you defend Sochi despite it being a far duller race this year? My answer to that is, they're both piss-poor tracks to race on. I'm an equal opportunity hater. Any further comments? No?
Nah.
Good. End of discussion. He's still not your son, Charles. Sorry. and our wee Scottish lass, wee Zoe, asks the last question of the mailbag this week. When will we face the fact that I'm really Dre's Glaswegian alter ego? Fellas?
I thought this was already established canon.
Yeah. I thought that's like why the constant attempts at murder were happening, because there can only be one.
Well, listen, we're both planning on going to Goodwood next year, so we'll find out if we really are just the same person. Like, we'll know very quickly. Let's put it that way.
Oh my goodness.
The similarities are alarming, I will say.
It was Zoe who shared, like, one of the greatest... One of the greatest things here, that Scott Ditson has a code word for lovemaking, and it's thank you for the pancakes.
I put in the Discord earlier, like, Scott loves syrup on his pancake, and I was just like, oh god, I just realized that. I didn't realize what I just said until I actually said it. I was like, yeah,
This is from the. This was apparently from the 2008 IndyCar Series postseason awards banquet.
Yeah, and he said it live in his speech in front of everybody in the room. Scott Ditson, ladies and gentlemen,
Scott likes his
pancakes.
Scott Ditson has no filter. Just check out his now deleted responses to Twitterbots.
Hang on.
Apparently, he has no problem sharing that he runs the high downforce configuration.
A bot asked him if he was circumcised, and I believe the response he used to have before it was deleted was something along the lines of 100% prime New Zealand beef. Yeah, so you replied 100% uncut New Zealand beef. Scott Ditson. The champion you want is in the head of your series.
we're immature.
Yeah, because to be fair, his wife's not much better.
now I can understand why Emma gets this way.
Yeah, like the quote the other day, I've looked at some pics on IndyCar.com of Scott Ditson. He is cuddling, laughing, or whispering to Dario Franchitti in 70% of them. Love me thinks. And, like, somebody tweeted us saying, nothing screams success at a racetrack like dudes kissing. And then Emma goes, I agree. Don't you think we need more PDA in IndyCar?
I mean, do we?
I say we can't have enough, quite frankly. We can never have enough of that shit. Also, Zoe wanted us to mention this before we go off the air as well, and finally for the night. Have anyone seen Will's new epic top design?
Oh my.
No, I haven't.
God, Will Power has a new shirt.
Yep. And it's a prominent feature, and a prominent feature of it is it's in reference to probably Will Power's most famous viral moment.
Double birds?
Yes, sir. Double birds. It's great. I'm gonna try and see if I can put up a link just before we go. God damn you, Will Power, where's your site? Ugh. Oh dear. But yeah. Go find it, King, when you get a chance. It's great.
Okay.
Hang on, I'm on it. Give me a second.
We're doing this in real time. These are yes. live sad reacts only.
Hang on.
Sad reacts.
Yep. Incoming in the chat in 3, 2, 1.
Oh my god. Double birds teeth.
Very clever. Very clever, Will.
I love it.
I see what you did, And on that note, it's time to end, I think.
I think the wonderful way we wrap it up, dick jokes.
We're a mature podcast of professionals, of course.
Very serious podcast, because motorsport is very serious.
Indeed.
And dignified.
Of course. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Places you can find us real quick one more time: youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101, at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. That's with 2 Ks. Our website, motorsport101.net. There's a brand new blog post I put up there a couple of days ago, by the way, talking about World Superbikes.
Go read it.
Yeah, it's all about World Superbikes and their new homologation rules in what I like to call Operation Slowdown Jonathan Ray. More of that will inevitably on Bike Live coming up this weekend. As mentioned, we'll be talking all about Sepang and those controversial new World Superbike rule changes. That will be fun. And remember, if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live. I've been Andre Harrison, they've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Woohoo! See, I got to see!
You've only gonna done it, mate.
Thanks for nothing.
You are the world champion!
Before we stop, bring in the goat.